Hi, this is Lenny Pfeffer, President of the Dorchester County Council, and you're tuned in to Mako's Conduit Street Podcast. Whether you're a Maryland resident, a government official, or just someone interested in learning more about public policy in Maryland, this podcast is for you.
Hello and welcome to the Conduit Street Podcast. This is Michael Sanderson, and joining me today is Dominic Butchko from the Mako Policy Team. Welcome, Dom.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Well, happy to have you here. We're going to talk some transportation stuff. And in your portfolio of policy issues working for Mako, you do land use and planning and environment stuff, but that's very connected to infrastructure and public works and transportation. So you work really closely with our county engineers and their local infrastructure and so forth. We want to talk about transportation today. So let's you and I do a little back and forth on transportation stuff, effects on local governments, but really talking big picture because there's a big commission coming. Fair enough?
Awesome. I love it.
Right. So, you know, for background, for our longtime listeners, some folks know that we really cut our teeth on the Kerwin Commission years and years ago before this became the blueprint for Maryland and one of the biggest and most consequential pieces of legislation in anyone's memory, including mine. There was a big blue ribbon commission talking about education funding and excellence and adequacy and so forth. And we took that really seriously at Mako. We used this podcast as a way to try and dig in between the meetings of that body. I sort of feel like what the General Assembly has put forth, a big blue ribbon commission on transportation funding and financing, feels like an opportunity to do something of the same, probably smaller scale. I don't think it's going to be every single week, but I think this is worth our attention and our listeners' attention, because I think this is kind of a big deal and it's got some real consequences. So that's what we want to get into. This commission is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, this is a very important topic, and mostly because Maryland is at a crossroads for how we fund transportation projects. And so first, before we do anything, let's dive into that question. How does Maryland actually fund transportation? So Maryland, we have a very consolidated system rather than 24 or 25, if you include the state siloed systems. We have one unified system controlled by the state. And so the state has revenues from taxes on vehicles, motor fuels, and also funding from the federal government. Those are the three main pillars that make up the big transportation trust fund, or TTF as Annapolis speak goes. And so highway user revenues, or HURs, another part of that alphabet soup that our listeners are probably very familiar with. They are part of the TTF, and they fund roads and bridges throughout our entire state. And they do that through an equitable and time-tested formula that's mostly based on road mileage and vehicle registrations. So because of the cuts to HURs, counties have already been paying for a lot of the local roads with property taxes. And many folks, again, have historical listeners will know that back in the Great Recession, we did see some major cuts. We had partial restoration this past legislative session, or two legislative sessions ago, if my memory serves correctly. But we still really aren't there. And so stage right, that's where we enter the Maryland Commission on Transportation Revenue and Infrastructure Needs, or TRAIN. And this commission is not only to consider how to fund roads, but also how to pay for transit infrastructure projects. And my favorite part about the whole commission, again, is the fact that they call it TRAIN. I think that's very
It's a time-honored thing. You find a good acronym, right? So, but I think, you know, the description of using a big consolidated transportation trust fund is a little different than in some other states, both in that there is a consolidation at the state level rather than the local level. A lot of states let their counties or their cities have like their own local gas tax, or they get a local revenue for people who get a license plate from your county, that sort of stuff. There are a variety of different systems where in other parts of the country, local governments have their own transportation revenues. We don't do that. Locals are entirely sort of beholden to the state system. So that's one way it's consolidated. Another that's a little esoteric, but for transportation nerds, this is kind of a big deal, is that we take all the modes of transportation that are supported by the state government, and they sort of all feed from the same trough. So that big consolidated transportation trust fund, the TTF, is the workhorse not just for roads and bridges, but to support operating costs of transit systems and to help support things like the airport and the Port of Baltimore and other sort of smaller scale transportation issues as well. So all of our surface and waterway and roadway and transit and so forth, all of that stuff really comes out of the same basic trough. The Motor Vehicle Administration does some sort of self-financing with fees and so forth, but in the main, it's the big TTF does the work for everybody. And that means we are putting an awful lot of weight onto the back of that one horse. Yeah. So I think as, you know, as we get into that, there's some, you mentioned transit is part of the conversation here, and there are some tricky issues in funding transit in Maryland, in part just because of our geographic issues are kind of peculiar. I think we're unique as a relatively small state where we basically are supporting two transit systems, like the entire MTA system in and around Baltimore, and the Baltimore regional system is kind of a hub system contained within the state of Maryland, but we're right up against Washington, D.C. They're a separate jurisdiction. We don't have the benefit of taxes coming from the downtown and all the assets that, you know, the transit system around Washington leads to, but we do have a great deal of the infrastructure to support and maintain the sort of WMATA system in Metro DC in the jurisdictions around there. So we've got a bigger chunk of responsibilities for doing transit than most states our size and shape. So that's a certain, you know, one of the challenges that leads us to having a commission like this to dig in. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the membership of this Blue Ribbon Commission. And it is Blue Ribbon, and we're proud to have some local folks at the table.
100%. Shout out, first of all, to our favorite current MACO president, County Executive Calvin Ball. He is one of our appointees on there, as well as Todd Moan. He is our rural representative and famously a Queen Anne County administrator. Excuse me there.
Right. So, I mean, technically the Maryland Association of Counties has a representative on the commission, and County Executive Ball is in those shoes. So, I mean, we're taking this seriously. He's the president of MACO, but also I think the geography of Howard County makes him a pretty good and logical fit for this anyway. I mean, he's served for a long time. He served almost 13 years as a council member in Howard County before becoming county executive, and he's now into his second term as county exec. So he's been there and seen an awful lot of things. He dates back to the years when highway user revenues really were the workhorse for local transportation as well as the state. But you look at the geography of Howard County, it's right in the center of the state. They're not as directly affected by like WMATA transit and MTA transit as maybe Prince George's County or Baltimore County might be, but they do have an awful lot of folks who commute into Baltimore, commute into DC. They use rail and they use transit and paratransit and bus systems and so forth. So he's got a jurisdiction with both urban and rural areas. He's got transit users and primarily drivers. I think he's got a good global perspective just by his station in Howard County, as well as being out on the road show this whole summer and spring, spending time with me talking to leaders from every jurisdiction about all the issues of the day. And transportation comes up really commonly as we have those meetings. So he's well situated to represent county governments on this. I'm comfortable with that. And Todd has a great perspective as well, too. Even though he's a county administrator, there's a little more to it than that, right?
Yeah. So Todd, as I said, is the Queen Anne's County Administrator, and that gives him a really good perspective on the nuts and bolts around local infrastructure and finances. I mean, he's at the very top there, but his background is also as a county engineer, and we still see him very active. Quick shout out to our county engineers affiliate, SEEM. He's still very active in the affiliate, and that's a real focus for him. He speaks their language, and Todd brings a background. I mean, so County Executive Ball, he's in the crossroads of Maryland. Maryland. You have Metro DC and Metro Baltimore. And then you have Todd, who has that administrator and then that technical background. I mean, really, we have two of the best appointees in Maryland we could find, I think, on this.
Yeah, I feel like we're in a good position there. And both of them, I think, are going to be productive contributors to this discussion, which is what you want, right? So the other thing is, like, sometimes you look around the table for a task force or a commission or a work group like this to get a sense of, like, how much gravity is in the room. And this one is going to pass the test, right? The members of this commission are big hitters from the General Assembly, you know, committee chairs and fiscal and policy leaders, both from the dollar side, but also from the sort of planning and transportation policy side, from the General Assembly and from these other stakeholder groups that are enumerated in the group. We may do sort of a rundown of the roster as we start to get a little more familiar with their meetings and start to see how their dynamics go. But suffice it to say, if you're wondering whether this is a big deal, thumb through the membership. We'll link in the show notes the organizational documents for the group, but you'll see who's around that table. That's why we want to spend some time on this. This is going to be its own sort of center of gravity. I'm pretty confident of that.
Well, they spent a good deal of time talking about the motor fuel tax. I think that's a really good place to start.
Right. So let's take some time on this episode and talk about maybe a couple of the issues that we can comfortably forecast, as it looks like they're going to take these up and spend time on it. I think that list is going to expand over time, but there's a couple things that I think are interesting policy issues, which I love talking about on the podcast. I think they're interesting things, but they're timely and important, both for local governments, but for anybody who's a stakeholder in sort of the Maryland transportation system and having secure and smart and solid funding plan, you know, for the generations ahead. So let's dig into that as a first topic, the motor fuel tax, the gas tax you pay at the pump. I mean, every state in the union, including Maryland, relies on gas taxes as a centerpiece of the way we fund road construction and repairs. And like we said, in Maryland, the entire Consolidated Transportation Trust Fund gets an awful lot of its revenue through motor fuel taxes. So we're at a weird spot where some years ago, the number of vehicles who were on the road and maybe wearing down the highway that didn't buy gas because they were using some alternative fuel, electricity or whatnot, was a relatively small number. But as that grows, what are states going to do with gas tax revenues that are in decline, even though the needs are still there and vehicles are on the road? So let's talk through that a little bit, just as a general policy issue, to sort of set up the conversation that this commission is bound to have in the weeks and months ahead.
So I think this is probably one of the most interesting catch-22s of public policy, and not just in Maryland, but really nationally, as we see a conversion from fossil fuels to electric vehicles. And so right now, fuel tax revenue has been dropping in recent years because drivers of vehicles with fuel have better fuel efficiency and they pay less per gallon in gas and diesel taxes. In addition to that electrification component, we're seeing more and more vehicles convert to EVs. More and more drivers, and this only exacerbates the issue. Now, consider this. Maryland is planning to move away from gas-powered vehicles almost entirely by 2035. So right now, we have a system basically set to cannibalize itself, and it's a system where we generate most of our revenue, and there's no plan B for that, which is why this commission is so important.
Right. I mean, the issue is front and center for them, but I mean, part of this is a policy decision by Maryland to say, you know, we increasingly want to see the public sector and eventually the private sector start focusing your purchases on these alternative vehicles that use something other than traditional, you know, fossil fuel, motor fuel. We want to see more electric vehicles and stuff like that, whether it's hybrids that use relatively little fuel or even fully electric that use no motor fuel. But you end up with that sort of hole in the boat of the gas tax being the way to fund patching up the roads.
100%. And so let's add a little bit more complexity to an already difficult
If this
product.
Isn't tricky enough, let's go.
Yeah. This isn't tricky enough. buckle up, pun intended. So cars and trucks, let's say that they convert to electricity. And so right now we assume that for gas powered vehicles, you have a certain amount of wear and tear. Well, as vehicles switch to electrification, the revenue that you're getting for that maintenance is shrinking. And we also know, so think of your roads and bridges, less money for that. But then we also know that electric vehicles significantly contribute to more wear and tear on those roads and bridges that we don't have revenue for. So think about this. It's been a while since I looked at the statistics, but I think an electric vehicle on average weighs 1 ton or more compared to the comparative fossil fuel internal combustion engine vehicle. And there's a great deep dive on our blog about this. So I encourage everyone to look at it. But think about that. We're having less revenue, yet we're having more wear and tear. I mean, I've had some of our engineers tell me that our parking garages, which is kind of this piece of infrastructure that sits in our communities and we don't think about them, but we're going to have parking garages that were built to one standard for, you know, some estimated weight of vehicles. And now 1 ton per average on every vehicle, we're not going to be able to be at full capacity. So just such an interesting challenge that we get to solve.
Right. But so it's sort of a magnifier effect on the policy disconnect. If the notion is you pay your gas tax and that's the way you pay for your share of degrading the roads, at least for the moment, at least for this generation of principally electric vehicles, they've got these big heavy batteries in them that generally speaking weigh more than an internal combustion engine. So they pay less in gas tax or nothing in gas tax toward solving the problem. And they may even contribute more because the weight of the vehicle on the tires and the wheels and so forth is the principal effect of degrading the roads themselves. So you actually got two arrows pointing in the opposite direction. We're not working together here. We have active, you know, bad juju there. So what do you do about it, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the question. So do we do a special tax for electric vehicles? And that raises a ton of interesting questions because we want electric vehicles to be affordable. I think right now the average cost is $60,000. That's not very affordable for the average Marylander. So we're going to have a special fee or a tax on top of that. I mean, there's plenty of policy levers and we've done a lot of really deep thinking and the commission so far has done a lot of really deep thinking. So, you know, special registration fees aren't the only mechanism to lower gas to counter act lower gas tax revenue and promote equity. So there's also tire taxes, there's battery taxes, they're expanding gas taxes and other fees. You know, Oregon right now has settled on a per mile charge as the fairest and most accurate way to pay for state roads and bridges. But here's the catch with what Oregon's doing, also called Origo, which I think is a brilliant name. But what that state is doing, it's optional. So you can opt into this program. You pay, I think it's 1.9 cents per mile, and then you get a credit to use versus your fuel taxes and maybe some other things.
Right. So I agree with you that you've got an array of options. Like if you want to say, okay, if you're out there driving an electric vehicle that pays no gas tax, we can't go on forever saying you just get a free ride and the other vehicles who are degrading the roads will pay all the freight for fixing the road. So, you know, if you buy into that sort of user pays concept, which might be worth its own deeper dive later, but if you buy into that user pays concept, the people who are wearing down the roads ought to pay to fix them up. Okay. So you got a variety of ways to do that. That vehicle miles traveled idea, the idea of putting some sort of a monitor, you know, on your odometer or a GPS device in your vehicle that monitors where you go and that sort of stuff. I think as a policy issue, like that might sound like it's the perfect way to do this. How many miles this vehicle has been on the public roads, but boy, that raises other issues too, right? I mean, financing transportation is tricky enough before you start getting into questions about privacy and so forth. Like, I'm not sure I want to have some database that knows exactly what road I was on every single day of every, you know, whatever. I don't want that to show up at my divorce proceeding or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think that would be an unattended consequence. So another idea that has been kicked around that we haven't talked about yet, Michael, is that we can dedicate some state electric tax to transportation and adjust that every so often to keep up the pace. I mean, assuming people are going to have chargers in their homes and you can put the tax when you charge at a public facility, it might be an idea that works.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility there. That, I mean, that's a way to get away from the idea of an extra tax or an extra charge that lands just on the vehicle itself. And then like that might feel like a disincentive to buy the vehicles, which may not be what you want as a matter of public policy. We're talking about this as a financing problem, but there are plenty of people even around this table who would say, but we want Marylanders to pick up on these alternative vehicles. We want to be high in adoption of electric vehicles for reasons other than financing the TTF. So maybe the idea of you target electricity, I mean, that starts to sound a little bit like a carbon tax or something like that, which, we've seen that idea get kicked around variously at one state level or one country level or whatnot. So, maybe something that's broader on energy use. I think you'd worry about it being regressive if it were just a tax on anybody who uses electricity, right? I mean, that's sort of a necessity for life, but maybe for higher level users, like if you're charging your car at your house all the time, then you'll be a high electricity user compared to your neighbor who doesn't. And maybe you try and capture some of that high level use as you're an over participant in the energy market, something like that, maybe.
So I think no matter what they choose, because we gave our listeners a lot of options here and a lot to chew on, there's going to be more fodder and we're going to be in the weeds of it here to explain it to you. And this is going to be stuff that not only impacts our counties, but impacts your everyday life. So we're here to explain it to you when it comes out.
Yep, that's our brand. We want to get into this stuff. I agree with you. I think it's a really interesting policy question. Like it's ready-made for a grad school class for students of political science or public policy or public administration. Like how do you slice this apple correctly to provide the right kind of incentives and still be able to fund modern infrastructure? I think it's a challenge. That's why you bring together a Blue Ribbon Commission to tackle tough questions like this. Like the conundrum of financing transit and so forth. So let's talk about one more thing that looks like we've got some foreshadowing maybe on the agenda for this transportation commission. And that is like how the state goes about selecting projects that get funded through the state transportation trust fund, through the state highway administration and so forth. So let me tee that up a little bit, and then you and I can go back and forth about how things work and where this conversation might go. But the big question is, we have strains on our transportation trust fund. In recent years, the state has been using general funds from sources other than the usual workhorses for transportation to help fund the operating costs of transit, to help fund things that ordinarily would be purely out of the transportation trust fund. It's that bleed over, I think, that has really pushed along this commission. But here we are. Maryland also may be looking at some changes to how projects get prioritized, how the state ends up deciding these are the state highways that we're going to focus on, and these are the things we're going to do in this part of the state, in that part of the state. This is a safety project. This is a traffic, this is a capacity expansion project and so forth. The way they do that might be up for debate here as well a little bit. So let's talk about how the state sort of picks its winners currently and maybe going on.
Yeah. So how the state picks its winners is mostly an executive branch function. So the Maryland Department of Transportation, MDOT, they lay out their funding for projects around the state in a 6-year rolling plan that is updated annually. And this is the CTP or Consolidated Transportation Plan. And if you follow them on social media, you will be accustomed to seeing we're in this state. My Twitter, now X, used to blow up with those posts all the time.
Oh, for sure. That is one of those big moments in Maryland politics when the new CTP gets rolled out. And it's usually basically like it's a 6-year plan. So it's a big document. Like I remember the old days when it would come out in print and it would be like one of those 2-inch thick fine print, you know, documents. It'd be just page after page after page of projects and so forth. But a lot of folks really, really care whether their local priority project made it into the state list or whether it stayed in. If it was, you know, it was in last year's program, but it was on the year 4 of year 6, did we get it advanced because we wanted to get moving more rapidly than that? It's a big deal when this comes out. People get into quite a stir over it.
Yeah. And so looking forward from what we heard from the first meeting of the commission, it seems like they're looking at recalibrating how the state prioritizes and pays for these projects. Now, the levels of magnitude for that calibration, we don't know. It could recommend changes to this very familiar system we've had for a long time and could be really dramatic, or it could just nibble around the edges and make some small changes, hoping that that's enough. But we really don't know yet.
Yeah. So I think it's worth talking about and partially, I mean, so this is a county podcast and a lot of our listeners are in and around county government. So there's a local government angle here as well, even though we're talking principally about state funds for like the state highways and their projects and transit systems and so forth that are state infrastructure. They serve our local areas and they're a really big deal to local leaders. The way this has worked for years and years, something that's really important to our local leaders is the Department of Transportation does sort of a roadshow. They go out and visit each of the counties. They go out to all the different regions of the state, and they get input from the county leaders, from the municipal leaders. They'll get an official letter from each county government that lays out, here are the priority projects for our jurisdiction. You know, we've taken a look around and we've worked on this list, and here are the 4 things that we think are our top priorities. And it might be, you know, we're worried about this particular interchange between a state highway and a local road, and we need some help with safety improvements on that and more lights and signs or whatever. But it might be we need a road widening on this highway. It's getting too backed up and we're having big congestion problems, more than we envisioned when the road originally got built, or we need to expand a transit line. All those sorts of things are coming from the local governments to help identify for the state. By the way, you don't have boots on the ground the way we do here. Here's what we're seeing in the field, in the county. These are our top priorities. I guess one of the things that we've gathered from the first meeting of this commission is there's a lot of variability in how this works, right? Like a given county might just submit a couple page letter saying, here are our 5 top projects with a quick description of each. And somebody else puts together sections of their whole engineering review and their preliminary environmental assessment and a lot of technical detail and so forth. So it might be weird for the Department of Transportation to receive from 2 neighboring counties a 3-page letter and a 75-page document that, you know, constitute sort of the same part of the process for the 2 different counties. So maybe that's got the ball moving a little bit in how are we doing this, both in the process of getting input from the locals, but also in how the state goes about sort of choosing, okay, what needs to get onto our yes list for this, you know, this round of 6-year funding.
Yeah, and it's not like these local priorities are binding either. So, you know, we have our Christmas list. We want to do all the things. Again, some counties, you said, submit 75 pages, but it's not like we're going to get everything we want. This system, though, of going from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it does seem like a sensible way for the departments to get input from the folks on the ground. Like you just said, you know, where are we having safety worries? Where do we need road widening? Where do counties feel that they're ready for a transit expansion? So that we are the folks in the communities every day implementing this, I feel like that's very valuable. And I hope that we retain some level of that in the new system.
Right. And this has an important interplay with land use planning, which is, you know, another area that you're connected with our local leaders, that you want input from the county government, who's got sort of, you know, they've got a master plan for growth. And what they're trying to do within their county is say, these are the parts of the county where we are expanding infrastructure. We're trying to make this, you know, we're trying to do some smart growth in this area, in this corridor. And those are the places where state emphasis on transportation infrastructure would dovetail with what we're doing with water and sewer, or what we're doing with planning for affordable housing and making spaces in our school system and so forth. So, like, you want those things to be hand in glove as you're thinking about them. If you had nobody but the state transportation planners throwing darts on where state projects were getting funded, you might end up at odds with this other effort that's mostly in the hands of local government. So having some bottom up process makes a good deal of sense. So if part of this conversation is about how does the state then go about deciding what to pick, what gets funded and so forth, the process for doing that can be a little bit tricky and maybe a little more contentious than you would think. You ready for a little background on this as you know, Grandpa holds court around the campfire a little bit here?
I love Grandpa stories. I am so ready.
So it really, this isn't all that long ago. It's just, you know, dealing with the last administration with Governor Hogan, but there was some back and forth on sort of this exact issue, the process that the Department of Transportation uses to say, we're going to fund this particular project and not that other particular project. And there are apparently some states that have really formalized this, that there's a really rigid scorecard system. And then, you know, their state department has to score every project by a certain series of things, you know, sort of like Olympic divers have to judge, you know, did you do this? Did you do that? You check all these boxes and you come up with a number. So it sounds like there are some states that have really rigid systems like that. We had legislation introduced and passed a number of years ago in Maryland to try and create a system like that, but it was surprisingly contentious. And a big part of it, I'm abbreviating a long story, but the abbreviated version would be, I think the Hogan administration was concerned that if you end up with a sort of one size fits all scoring, tabulation that applies to a transit expansion in exactly the same way as a safety upgrade for a highway, that you're going to end up with some questions that the two answer very, very differently. I think their point of view was, if a number of these questions are about diverting people from carbon use and impact and advancing environmental gains and so forth, then you'll probably end up seeing higher scores for every transit project than you could achieve for any ground, for any highway or road or bridge project. And in that regard, they were saying, you know, it's possible we'll upend our entire system and only end up funding transit, and we'll have zero for Washington County or for Cecil County or for Caroline County or parts of the state where mass transit just isn't, you know, a major element in their transportation plan just due to a lack of population density. So this was, believe it or not, like a white hot political issue just several years ago. So kind of worth tucking away as a potential big deal. It may be that the current Department of Transportation and administration may be closer in seeing eye to eye with legislative leaders on this, but it doesn't make it like a slam dunk to, hey, let's just work together for a big scorecard and everybody's going to be thrilled with that. Because, you know, the devil may be in the details. So put a pin in that. This may be a hotter issue than meets the eye. It might sound like bean counter, you know, policy nerd kind of stuff. But, you know, folks end up, you know, slinging mud over this stuff. It gets interesting pretty quick.
So, and I think one of the most interesting things about this debate to keep an eye on, you know, let's talk about the context of climate change and what some of the data is showing us, too. I mean, you know, the sea levels are rising, the temperatures are getting hotter. For the first time, at least in my memory, Annapolis this summer had air quality issues. So I'm curious to see how the new administration, as well as the General Assembly, will want to score mass transit and public transit versus roads, because, you know, The data shows mass transit is better for the environment, but mass transit isn't always appropriate in more of our suburban and rural areas. So I'm very interested to see how this scoring structure works and how the state might use that as a selection process. So it's going to be a much richer debate than meets the eye, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm buying that. I think it's another one of these things that's worth keeping an eye on. there's a local government component here because our folks value their input. And I think we are right as local governments to feel like big picture transportation planning ought to be done in concert as much as possible with the sort of small scale. Where are we going to have land use growth? Where are we funneling infrastructure funds to make that smart and sustainable and so forth? You want to have all those folks on the same page, one degree or another. That's, you know, that might sound to some folks like, oh, counties want to veto over this or that. That's not what we're trying to say, but I think we do have an important seat at the table on this sort of stuff. So let's talk about where this commission is going. Those are two of the issues that I think are interesting and important for us to be watching and talking about for the months and weeks ahead. What else do we have set up for this commission? Where are they heading?
Yeah, so let's talk the timetable. So the commission is going to meet over the next 2 years, and they'll have an interim report due before next session, which I believe is December. So for those of you salivating after listening to our podcast saying, oh my God, I can't wait to hear what's next, hopefully sometime in December, we'll have an update, and we'll have updates periodically leading up to that as well. And we'll be covering their work, much like we covered the Kerwin Commission. So we're going to try our best to be the best source to get, quote, into the weeds on the commission and its work.
I think that's our plan. And if folks who are longtime podcast listeners, all you Kevin Canale stands out there, if you're worried that it's just going to be Dom and Michael talking about this, don't worry. This is going to turn into a financing commission. We're going to start getting into complicated issues that talk about taxes and fees and charges. We know that's some of the area that Kevin covers very adeptly on Mako's behalf. So he'll be in the mix as well. Don't panic. You're going to get your share of Kevin on this as well. So your cheers guy is going to be in the fold. Don't worry. Anything else we want to get into, Dom, while we do stage one of transportation financing?
I just can't wait to see how this rolls out. It's going to be a generational change, and I am both excited and feel very lucky to watch it and hopefully be a part of it.
Yep, I agree. I think we are correct in identifying this one is worth a good deal of our time and attention. Hopefully our listeners will agree. Okay, friends, let's wrap up this walk down Conduit Street with that. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe. That way, all the episodes will be delivered directly to the device of your choice. Go ahead and smash that 5-star review. It's the best way to let people know what they're missing out on. You can also follow along with Conduit content on social media, Facebook, that thing that I'm still calling Twitter, and of course, the Conduit Street blog. So for Dominic Butchko, this is Michael Sanderson signing off, and we will talk to you soon.